get promos and discounts from Filipino startups. Check out our partners at the description.
Brian of London is the inventor of V4V, Podping, and is also involved in many projects on the Hive blockchain. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the Startup Podcast. I'm very honored to meet you and interview you. How are you?
I'm great. Looking forward to this.
Yes, it's actually very fortunate for me to interview you. You're actually involved in many projects on the Hive blockchain, and one of them is V4V. Maybe later on we can talk about Podping, but I guess for now, I'll have to ask about V4V. So what really is V4V, Brian?
V4V came out of work on the renewal of podcasting. And it's a V4V stands for value for value. And it's the idea that we've all been stuck. Web 2.0 took us into this world of advertising supported everything. Advertising paid for everything on the internet. Advertising paid for Google, it paid for Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, all of these sites that we use today, it's TikTok, they're paid for by advertising. And so whilst we've started to develop, especially over the last 10 years, a way that creators, people who make things, can get some money back, they get back peanuts. TikTok becomes violently wealthy. Facebook, Google, you know, the sums are staggering, and the crumbs that they let fall, you know, 30% or 20%, you know, Twitter's doing something, or X is now doing something quite unusual, and then they seem to be giving a reasonable percentage back, but that's because they don't make much money. TikTok keep all the money, Facebook, Google, they all keep the money. Value for value means I listen to a podcast. I don't want to pay Apple. I don't want to pay Spotify. I want to pay the podcaster. And so what the guys who renewed podcasting are doing, that's the model they've built. And the lead guy is Adam Curry and the technical guy, Dave Jones. They came up with this whole philosophy of how you compensate people for, and value for value, what they settled on was using something called the Lightning Network, which is a layer on top of Bitcoin. And I won't get into the specifics of the details, but Lightning is a pain in the ass behind the scenes to use. But I was a Hive person, and I looked at this and I thought, you know what I can do? I can combine. The biggest problem people have with Lightning is receiving. Lightning is not like Bitcoin. If your audience is crypto aware, you know, you have your Bitcoin address, or you can generate a new Bitcoin address each time if you run your own node and you have the right software. And you can just send a transaction to that Bitcoin address. And it doesn't matter when it happens. Nobody needs to be online because the transaction happens within the whole Bitcoin network. All those miners using all that electricity and so on, they are keeping the tables. They are keeping the records for you. Lightning is not like that. Lightning is a collection of 11,000 nodes. And each one of those has to be online all the time. And what this Lightning Network does is it's like a spider's web, and you kind of, you're over here and you want to pay someone over there, but your node then says, okay, I can send some sats to this one, then I can send it to this one, and then it goes through the network until it arrives at the destination. But essentially, to receive funds on Lightning, it's a pain. So I said, there's actually something else I can do. We have Hive. Hive is a store of value. I can take sats that I receive. So I can run one node and payments can come to me. And then I can immediately send them out as Lightning, send them out as Hive on the Hive network. So I set that up for ThreeSpeak. So every podcast, every channel on ThreeSpeak is a video podcast. You can search for, you know, your name on Hive ThreeSpeak on almost every podcast, on modern podcasting apps. And you can even do this on Apple's podcast app. You can watch ThreeSpeak videos on Apple's app on your phone as a podcast. But the more advanced, what we call podcasting 2.0 apps, they allow you to stream payments. So you can have a little wallet with $20 in it, and you can say, while I'm listening to this podcast, send 20 sats, 30 sats, you know, it's a couple of cents per minute. And that system's working, people are using it, and I provide a gateway so that you can receive, instead of having to worry about all the Lightning complexity, you just receive Hive, and I pay you HBD. And it that part of it didn't take off. I didn't really promote it very much. But what that then grew into was I started running, and you can find this at v4v.app. It's a gateway. So it lets you send Hive, you give Hive, and you can pay any Lightning invoice. And there are services out there that are really quite useful, especially in America. You know, there's a thing called BitRefill and Bitcoin, and there's places that let you buy international eSIMs. They accept payments as Lightning, and I let you pay a Lightning invoice with Hive. So you, if the invoice is for $10, you pay $10 of HBD, boom, the invoice is paid, and it happens in 3 seconds. No blockchain, you know, no long, you know, because Bitcoin's impossible nowadays, you know.
Yeah.
And the fees on Hive are free, and the fees on Lightning are very, very low. So all in all, that's the gateway I built. And just to, I'll wrap this little pot up very soon. The next bit, the bit that I'm going to release anytime in the next week or so, is a sort of a more comprehensive wrapper around this, which will let you keep some Lightning on my system. Now, I don't want people storing lots of Lightning on it, you know, $20, $30, $40. And the reason I need to do that is that then Sagar, who's a dev in India who's working on the ThreeSpeak app, he is going to make the ThreeSpeak video playing app one of these apps that can stream payments to creators direct, no middleman, no cut, no percentages. So we're kind of joining up this ecosystem. And the final part, and the bit that's coming in the future, is Voltec is working on something called VSC, which is smart contracts for Hive. But what that means for me is wrapping Bitcoin on Hive, and then I won't be the exchange anymore. I won't be doing the exchanges. That'll happen in the VSC network, but I'll be the gateway to the Lightning network. And it's a big, it's kind of, and it's just me really. I'm doing this. It's a one man band. Cheers.
Yeah. So it's actually a lot what you're doing, Brian. Just for our broader audience to appreciate more what you've said, because maybe some of the listeners are not aware that, like, the essence of decentralization, the essence of quote-unquote Web3 or quote-unquote crypto is actually to, I mean, there are actually many motivations, but also to remove the middleman, to remove the decentralized platform from one entity or from one peer to another peer. So I think that's the best part about V2V, right? So you actually can remove the middleman so that the value that one person creates can equally be traded with another value. But when I actually spoke with, so I actually interviewed Matt of ThreeSpeak a few weeks back. And maybe by definition, we can say that blockchain is actually a bit slow, right? Because you have to validate the transaction across many nodes in the network. And can you just give a short explanation on how really does the Lightning network work? I mean, not too complicated, but just to give an easy picture for our listeners.
Okay, yeah. Because it is different. Lightning is not a blockchain network, okay? Lightning is built on top of Bitcoin. So underneath Lightning Network is all of the functionality of Bitcoin. But what Lightning is we know that we can't use Bitcoin for small payments quickly because it's got 10 minutes at least between blocks. And now the fees have climbed. So, you know, if you want to send, you know, sometimes we're on the Lightning Network, we're sending one sat. I don't even know what that is at the moment. It's sub pennies.
Yeah.
What Lightning does is it says, okay, I'm a Bitcoin node. I'm a full node on the Bitcoin network. I'm not mining, but I keep a complete list of all of the transactions that have ever been for Bitcoin. And I record each new block as it comes in. And I want to send some Bitcoin to another Bitcoin node. So what we do is the two of us, well, one of us says, okay, I am going to take 5 million sats, you know, $1,000. I'm going to take 5 million sats and I'm going to pay to this other Lightning, this other Bitcoin address, but I'm going to make the transfer what's called a time-locked transfer. It's like a multi-signature transaction. So I'm going to make an agreement with this other Lightning node. We're both going to sign the transaction. I'm going to put 5 million in, but we're going to agree certain rules that when we unwind this, some goes to the other side and some goes to me. Okay, so you start off. So I open, and that's what's called opening a channel. So I open a channel to another node. Then I want to send that other person 1,000 sats. So together, our two nodes, and that's the Lightning software, it says, okay, send it. And so that one says, here's an invoice. It sends it to mine. Mine says, oh, I can pay this invoice. And look, I've got a route. I can send the sats directly along the channel. It's like beads on an abacus. I'm going to push some of my beads over to his side. If this sounds crazy, believe me, working with it is. But it works. And so my Lightning node says, okay, here's 1,000. And now we both have a record, okay? Just us. I've got 4,999,000 and he's got 1,000. And as it goes on, I can send more to him. So maybe one day it's 3 million on my side and it's 2 million on his side. And we decide, one of us decides to close the channel. When that happens, another Bitcoin transaction is made and the 3 million comes to me and 2 million goes to the other party. Now, the way the Lightning Network works actually is that lots of these all channel together. And when I want to send sats to a node that I'm not directly connected with, I don't have a channel with them, my node looks at all the channels I've got and it looks where all the sats are. Are they on my side? Are they on the other side? Can I send it this way? So it sends out little tests and it gets to another node and then it gets there. And it's like finding a path through the internet. It's very similar to the way packets route on the internet, but it's with money. And when it finds a path and it says, okay, I'm trying to send 100,000 sats and there's enough what's called liquidity. So sats are in the right place. And it goes like, okay, three loops. And each one of those things can charge a fee for this. And it says, okay, we've got a path. Finalize it. We finalize the path. Each one records their own little bit of the transaction. And cryptographically at the other end, it says, oh, I received some sats. And that takes around, and I track this because I actually know, you know, the Lightning Network people, the Bitcoin people think it's really fast. It isn't. It takes from 3 seconds to sometimes a minute and then it can fail. It's not like Hive. I mean, Hive is just reliable and easy and works. But the reason I like Lightning and the reason I like using Lightning is that it has attracted vast amounts of venture capital money. So they are paying for all sorts of stuff in El Salvador and giving the whole country, you know, a Chivo Lightning wallet. It's being promoted in Venezuela. It's being promoted in a lot of places by big pots of venture capital money. And they're building infrastructure. Shops are starting to accept it. I don't know what it's like in the Philippines, but it certainly isn't anywhere I'm in Israel. Other than the Bitcoin embassy in the center of town, nobody accepts Lightning here. But the problem is, you know, in the developed world, we've got Apple Pay. You know, Apple Pay on this thing, it's just magnificent. It works. It's so beautiful. It's so elegant, but it's expensive. It's controlled by Apple and Visa and MasterCard. And in the markets where it's taken hold, Apple Pay, Google Pay, I don't think we'll beat them. But across South America, and I'm sure across Southeast Asia, you know, we are coming up. What the actual upshot of what I've built is that there's an app you can, and it's a web app, so it's not in the App Store because that's deliberate, because I don't want Apple being able to tell me, no, you can't have this feature. You call it up on your phone. You say, I want to charge someone $2. You show them a QR code. The other phone snaps the QR code. Lightning's really good at this. You can pay with Lightning or with Hive. And that's the beauty, is that if people are into Hive, they're into Hive. But Lightning is a bigger market at the moment. You pay with the Lightning. The merchant gets Hive. And $2 just transferred from one person to another without Visa, without MasterCard, without Apple and Google. That's like We've got all the tools, and it's as easy as Apple Pay, and that's really important. We have to be as good as that.
Yeah. Actually, in the Philippines, the fintech landscape here. Actually, there are a few companies. There are actually quite a number of like huge institutions doing like the digital money, right? And there are actually a few startups that's pushing Bitcoin payment here. And actually, I've heard one or two using actually the Lightning Network. Yeah, so maybe our listeners can research about that. But anyway, I'm actually curious about your work, because you're actually doing this for Hive as well. So you mentioned that you actually started building in Hive. So can I ask, in the first place, why did you choose to build in the Hive blockchain? I mean, there are other blockchains out there. Why did you choose Hive?
Okay, so I'll give you a little story, because it's always nice to have stories. And this will actually explain something about a court case I'm involved with. A few years ago, I am involved with some pretty controversial people from the UK. And one of them, he had a big Facebook page, and I helped grow that Facebook page. And we grew it. It was political, and it grew from, you know, like 50,000 followers and stuff to well over 1 million. And it turned out it was actually one of the largest political pages in the UK. And the guy whose page it was hated by the government, literally hated. In the end, he put out, the BBC tried to destroy him with a piece of journalism, but he sent an undercover person in to record the BBC journalists doing unscrupulous things, and he made his documentary before theirs. When he put that out, 24 hours after that video went out, he was banned from Facebook, his page was deleted, and he was banned from everywhere. And my Facebook account was also deleted at the same moment, because I was listed as an administrator. And it wasn't just locked or you know, you've done a bad thing. It was just gone. It evaporated. I couldn't download. It doesn't matter anyway. I don't care. But soon after that, I was introduced to Hive. And this was 2018. And I started thinking, and I realized all the amount of work put into my friend's Facebook page is gone, because one guy in, you know, Zuckerberg can just, is gone. Bye-bye. You know, 1.2 million followers and stuff. And they did it. They did it in such a nasty way. I mean, they literally put out a press release lying about my friend. And the whole press in the UK ran the press release. And they went on. It was literally the worst sort of attack. And I came across Hive. My friend explained it to me. I understood Bitcoin, but I wasn't into it. But I understood the nature and the power of being uncancelable. You know, I've got my Hive keys. Nobody can delete my stuff. You can't delete my account. You can do all sorts of things to me, but you know, unless you put a gun to my head and tell me, but even then I can't delete all my posts from the Hive blockchain. I can't do it. At the same time, my friend also got involved. The friend who introduced me to Hive is a lawyer. And he realized that in 2018, Facebook and Google had actually, we believe they tried to destroy the entire crypto market. What they did was, and Facebook led and Google followed, and actually Twitter at the time followed, so did LinkedIn and all of them. They banned advertising. And that might not seem like much, but what did they do? They banned the ability of crypto projects to advertise, and not just crypto projects, and because they said that it was all scam and so on. But they banned companies selling mining equipment. They banned wallets. They banned hardware wallets. They banned any promotion of anything related to an entire industry. They just banned it without legal authority. And so my friend is an Australian lawyer, and we were already, he was using Hive, I was using Hive. Hive is a competitor to Facebook. And what they did was they banned Hive. And at the time, there was actually one user who was just bringing in loads of new users by advertising on Facebook and YouTube. They banned that. And the sign-ups dropped off a cliff. they banned their competitors. So we sued, my friend literally sued them in Australia, and it's been going for a long time. We had a bit of a loss last year in the sort of, we didn't lose on any of the substance, but the judge doesn't like the way we've brought the case because we're funding it ourselves and we haven't got a huge law firm. Me and my friend a year ago, we flew to Australia, him and me, and we were sitting in a room with like, there were the Google and Facebook both sent like 10 lawyers. And so we're just him and me. I had to get special permission to sit at the front table in the court because I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a, you know, his friend who's helping him. And the judge actually stopped the case on the grounds that we're not a big law firm. So we're appealing that, saying, you know, this is anti-competitive itself. It's like, how can you not let us bring the case? You've said that the case has merit, but we're not going to let it go through. But anyway, so we're now that we got to this stage, it looks like we might get more, we might get some proper funding. One of the things actually we said to the judge was, which we said, look, because we're suing the richest companies in the world, these two companies together, they're wealthier than Australia, pretty much. I mean, it's like they can deploy infinite money against us. And we said to the judge, if you don't like the way we're, if we don't have enough money to bring the case to the way that you think we should bring it, you can order them to pay us some money. We'll hire fancy lawyers too. But she didn't do that. Anyway, we'll see where that goes. But that's what brought me to Hive. And then while I was doing some work for Andrew for that case, I used to be a programmer, and I stopped programming in like 2000. And I started looking at programming again and Python, which didn't exist the last time I programmed. And I did some work for the case to do some graphs to show how on the day that Facebook banned advertising, the price dropped. And then on the day that Google did some advertising, it dropped more. And when Twitter banned it, it dropped more. And then when Facebook relaxed their advertising ban a little bit, it went up. So there's this massive correlation, and that's part of our lawsuit. So I learned Python. I was looking at Hive, and Hive is actually quite, you know, I was quite excited by the possibilities of what you can do when you can move value and store things on this giant database that you're not really, you don't have to run. So I got sucked in. And in fact, I sort of turned my life around and switched from doing some other business in Israel to being a programmer again, because it gives me joy. I like it. And I like creating things that people use. And you know, I see videos now on X of people in Venezuela or in Ecuador, you know, going out and buying noodles with the app I made. I love that.
Wow. Yeah, this actually brings into mind two of the things I always hear when I interview the founders from Hive. So first, censorship resistance. So actually, most of the Hive founders really create this new platform, these new products, because they want our current platforms to be censorship resistant. So for example, ThreeSpeak is, I mean, you can call it like a censorship resistant video platform, unlike like some of our traditional video platforms that we use now. And maybe even, for example, Dbuzz. So they call themselves the censorship resistant short form social media or microblogging platform. And another like overall principle that I always hear is traditionally there's this centralized entity that can actually be somehow controlled by money and power. For example, imagine if that entity, the owner of, for example, let's say Facebook or for some big, or maybe even connected to the government, for example, if money can actually control a lot of things, and it can actually, censor and basically just delete someone's account. But regarding this, for example, regarding this whole movement, it's actually more than a lawsuit. It's more of a movement. What do you see, what do you aim to accomplish? I mean, do you see a future where all our platforms, especially in the internet, are decentralized, something like that? So what do you see in the future, maybe?
Look, the issue we have is that the usability of a centrally controlled platform with a database that's run by one guy, it's very hard to beat. It's very hard to outscale X or Facebook. But the fact that there are alternatives is very important. And like what I've built, a central problem with what I've built is that I run the Lightning node and I run the software. But as soon as the VSC network comes that Voltec is building, it's a very, very clear part of me is that I want the package of software that I'm running right now to be on GitHub, downloadable. Now, you'll have to invest time. You'll have to run a Lightning node. You'll have to have a certain element. It won't be the easiest service in the world to replicate, but I want to make it replicatable so that there are 5 or 10 of me. And the system itself just says, okay, this one's going to handle the transactional. This one, just like a blockchain kind of chooses the next node to sign the block. That's the direction of what I'm building. The second thing is actually this grew out of podcasting. And I'll make a circle around to a thing called Podping and why it's important. Back in, I'm a lot older than perhaps you realize. Back in the earliest days of the internet, We read blogs and we wrote blogs. I've been blogging since 2003 or so. Podcasting. I had a podcast in 2006.
Oh, wow.
The reason there's something special that happened that didn't happen to podcasting, or especially audio podcasting, that happened to everything else. Blogs kind of got eaten by Facebook. Okay. In the end, it became too easy to write a status update on Facebook and put in a photo and share it with you. And running a blog yourself, running WordPress or movable type or any of the other options, they involve paying hosting companies and keeping the software up to date and all of this stuff. And 99% of the world just wanted to go on Facebook and say, look what my kids did this morning. So they won. Video had another problem, which was that video was insanely expensive to share. And YouTube, at a massive loss, came along and did that until they were bought in a fire sale, basically, by Google. And only with the might of Google, who were already by then was a massive cash generator, only then could you do video at a reasonable cost and give it away. And because doing your own video, hosting your own video was so expensive, you just stuck it on YouTube or Facebook or one of these others. Podcasting kind of was never sexy enough for any one company to eat it. So to this day, podcasting is decentralized. All you need for a podcast is a text file called an RSS file and a series of MP3 files. And a link that link. That's it. That's all podcasting is. It's super, super simple at its base. But it got left behind in terms of features. And that's what Adam Curry, who was like the inventor of podcasting, because back in 2003 or 4, he went to the guy who'd invented RSS and said, if we just put an MP3 file in an RSS feed, then you've got a blog with audio, and that's a podcast. And then Steve Jobs came to him a couple of years later and said, do you mind if we put podcasts on this thing we've got now called the iPod? Can we put your idea as a software, as a line item? So you've got albums, you've got, basically on the menu of the first iPods, it was music mostly. And then there was another line called podcasts. And the podcasts came from Adam Curry's idea. Apple was a pretty good steward. They created the index of all the podcasts.
Yeah.
But when Apple started censoring people, Adam Curry said, no, I don't like this anymore. I want to take the podcast index back. So he created something called the podcast index. He created podcasting 2.0. We started adding features. And when I say we, I mean a group of open source developers who just come together around a podcast and the GitHub repo. And so they say, we want to add this feature. What feature do we want to add? We want to add transcripts. Podcasts need transcripts. Because then, I'm recording in an English podcast. But a lot of people around the world whose English is their second language, if they can see the words on the screen, they can learn from this. So we added transcripts. And you know what happened? We added transcripts 3 years ago. We added a tag, just a tag. And the tag just says link to a subtitle file, the same, any of the formats that people know from video. And what happened earlier this month or month ago? Apple phoned up Adam Curry and said, we're going to put transcripts into our podcast app. And instead of developing our own way of doing it, we're going to use the open source GitHub way that you wrote down 3 years ago. And that is huge. The second thing, we've changed a lot of stuff around podcasting. There's the value for value payments, the streaming stats, that's all brand new. But there's another thing we did, which now involves Hive, which is what I contributed. And that's this thing called Podping. I'm trying to keep everyone, I hope you're with me.
Yeah.
When you have this RSS file that is your podcast, it's just a list of episodes. It's some information about the podcast itself, the title, who the hosts are, all of that stuff, description, the little image that appears in all the apps. And then it's a list of episodes. And when you want to publish a new episode of your podcast, what you do is you just edit that text file. You just go in, add a new episode at the top, save it. But that's just a file sitting on a website somewhere. How does anybody know that it just updated? Well, the way that this has worked since the beginning of podcasting and since the beginning of blogging even, sort of since 2000 odd, is that an indexer somewhere, Google, Apple, Spotify, or now the new podcast index, they have a bank of computers and they've got 4 million RSS feeds. And every hour or every 20 minutes, if it's a popular one, or 5 minutes or whatever, they have to go and say, have you updated? Have you updated? Have you updated? And so if you want to check 4 million feeds every hour, that's a lot of work. There's no, basically, what podcasting lacks is push notifications. You know, we all know what those are on our phone. It's like, you don't have to go to your phone and pull down and did I get, you know, it's like, no, X tells you, you've been mentioned. So how can we do open source global notifications for a new episode of a podcast without using somebody else's infrastructure who can censor or stop or just go out of business? Now, there was another service like this called WebSub Hub, and Google runs it, okay? But it's Google, and it doesn't work in a very good way. So I proposed, and literally we were having a sort of a chat on like this, and I said, we could use Hive. I was specifically thinking about Splinterlands, because every time you play a game on Splinterlands, they write a little thing called a custom JSON to Hive. It's just a tiny little transaction. I said, we could do that. Every time a podcasts a new episode, we could just write the name of just the URL of the RSS file. We just put that on Hive. And they like, oh, I don't understand. You know, how do you do that when it costs a fortune? I said, no, transactions are free on Hive. We just need some resource credits. Won't take very much. So I did some maths, and then I wrote 25 lines of Python to do the first thing. And I kind of watched a bunch of very popular podcasts that update all the time. And I just started sending these to Hive every time they published a new episode. And it worked. It just worked. And then you could write a client that just watches the Hive blockchain. So anyone can write to Hive. You just need a little bit of Hive power and some keys. And anyone can read from Hive. You don't need anything. So Podping is the system whereby, and now we've got about 40 or 50% of the biggest publishers of podcasts, hosting companies. Whenever one of their customer and 3Speak, whenever one of their customers presses publish in the background, as well as saving it on their own database and updating the RSS file, they send out a little Podping. And that goes onto Hive. And so,
I get it now.
And Podcast Index is one of the main customers of this. So they don't have to. So they know there's like half of the 4 million podcasts. They don't have to check them every hour. They don't check them. They just wait to see a pod ping. And that system's been running for 2 years. I have done hardly any maintenance on it. I have an automated way of giving it resource credits. So the resource credits go up and down as needed. It just works. It's magical.
Yeah.
And it's using Hive, and it's tiny. It's a rounding error in comparison to the traffic that Splinterlands puts on the blockchain. And all in all, I got about a $7,000 from the DHF, which built it, and the $7,000 is still there, and that provides the Hive power to run all of this infrastructure and nobody can stop it. And that's the point. I can't stop anyone pod pinging. Now, if someone comes along with lots of, and they want to spam pod ping, okay, we'll just ignore those, you know, but so that's pod ping. And I think it's one of the most I'll shout my horn a bit. I think pod ping is the only non-gaming, non-financial, non-social use of a blockchain that anyone has ever come up with that's actually real.
Yes.
All of this stuff about tracking cattle, and you can do all of that with a corporate database. But keeping decentralized podcasts decentralized and able to make a global notification, because we could use Twitter, okay? But what if the Twitter account that was sending them pod pings got banned? How do you deal with that?
Yes, it actually blows my mind. I mean, these things that you've said. I mean, podping is actually kind of magical, and I actually realized now. I mean, for example, the episodes of Startup Podcast, we upload it on YouTube and Spotify, and I just realized now that YouTube, for example, hosting and distribution or publishing is in one place, but in podcasts, they're actually on different places.
Everywhere.
And these different places, there's actually much more places. So there are many places where people can host podcasts, and there are now more and more publishing or distribution platforms. So I guess this is also the system that you have exploited. That's why Podbean actually works, right? So yeah, it's really amazing. And it's true what you said, that maybe this is one of the blockchain applications that really works. And I think it really works in the true blockchain manner. Now, I'm very curious now. I mean, you're a developer for a very, very long time. Why have you been doing, and this is our last question, why have you been doing this project? I mean, why not work for some big company? I mean, is this more of a value? Is this more of a value that you've maybe picked up maybe when you were younger? So, I mean, when you're a developer, you can choose certain paths to develop certain stuff, but you chose this path. So I just want to ask about that. Why did you choose this path of developing decentralized projects, open source projects? So why did you choose this this software development career?
Okay. So I learned to code when I was 11. I got a ZX81 in 1981. So now you know how old I am. And I went all the way through my childhood being a coder, but back in the days before the internet. And then I went to university just as the internet was coming. And I wound up doing a physics degree and then a computer. Then I went back into physics and I got a PhD in physics. And my PhD was writing a gigantic computational fluid dynamics simulation of how plastics flow when they're molten on a very theoretical physics level. Huge piece of programming, C++, and this was around 95, 6, 7, almost pre-internet. The internet was just starting. You couldn't go to Stack Overflow and ask questions because it didn't exist. And then I stopped programming and I did business and other stuff, but I just kind of missed it. And what I'd never done, I've never had a job of programming. I've never been a coder for someone else. I wouldn't know how to do that. So I'm working for myself. Fortunate enough that the funds I get from the DHF, coupled with some other businesses, I can support myself doing this without having to go. And you know what? I try to hire people to help me. And I just got frustrated because I found with a combination first of YouTube and now with ChatGPT and Copilot and all this other stuff, I can do this stuff and I quite like learning it and it's good for me. It makes me happy to learn. You know, I wanted to build a front end for my website and I took somebody else's stuff and repurposed it and they kind of helped me. And then I tried to hire someone to do the front end dev. And, you know, I should have come to you guys in the Philippines. But in the end, I just spent 8 hours watching a course on Udemy. And okay, now I know how to do Vue, Vue 3, you know. And I must say, earlier this, you know, in the last 6 months or so, I have to say Copilot is just, it's for this, it's breathtaking. It really does help. And why am I doing open source? Because I actually believe, you know, I'm in a difficult place in the world. You know, we've had a lot of trouble here in Israel. But I fundamentally believe that freedom is what we're actually fighting for. True personal freedom. Most people don't want that. Just to get a bit philosophical. They want to actually be kind of, this is your job. This is the money you'll get every month. And just live your life. Freedom and the sort of responsibility for your own actions, it's not something everybody, you know, they say they want it, but when they get it, they get a bit scared by it. Freedom of speech, freedom of conscience, freedom of thought, very, very, very important. And money, the ability to cut off somebody's money, that's a horrible power. And we see, you know, in the world around us, you know, this push towards CBDCs and so on. I don't see another way of stopping that other than what we're doing. And it might seem frivolous, you know, posting on Hive and playing Splinterlands and all of these stuff, but the underlying technologies, I think, are much more important than some of the uses that we're putting them for now.
So achieving true freedom, achieving maybe genuine liberty, and it's also more in the structure. I mean, we should have a structure that promotes this freedom. Yeah. So yeah, I guess I also learned a lot from this conversation, Brian. So thank you very much for sharing your stories. And actually, you're doing a lot of projects, especially in the Hive blockchain. And actually, not just for the Hive blockchain, it's for the world. Actually, it's for the people. Actually, so if our listeners got interested about what you're doing, maybe they want to know more about you, maybe want to know about your project. So maybe you can lead them to some sites, some links that you have for them to know more about V4V, Podping, and other things that they're doing.
For sure. The center of it is just Brian of London, all one word, Brian of London. That's my name on Hive. That's the center. That does link to my X account, which I lost for a year, for example. My ex account was banned for 1 year. I only got it back in March last year because I said a joke. You know, my name, Brian of London, it's a sort of a allusion to Monty Python's Life of Brian because I was living in London. And I replied to someone, I said, yeah, as a joke, it's a line from the film. It's a very famous line from one of the most famous comedy films of all time. And I replied to someone, now write it out 100 times or I'll cut your balls off. Twitter banned me for a year. Eventually, a year later, I kept submitting appeals. And finally, actually, the appeal that worked was when I wrote back and said, if you give me my account back, I'll pay for Twitter Blue. So they gave me my account back. And yeah, I pay for Twitter Blue, but or X Blue. And
yeah.
The thing is, I actually admire what Elon has done there. I think his heart's in the right place. Now, I don't agree with everyone he reposts and so on, but I think he's a good guy. I think he's working. I think he understands freedom and he understands conscience. But my center of online space, I've got brianoflondon.me as well as my website, but honestly, Hive is easier to maintain. So that's why I prefer Hive. So, you know, Pete D, but Dbuzz, at Brian of London. And then from there, at V4V app and at Podping. But Brian of London is where all the announcements go.
Yeah, so for those who want to get updated on Brian of London's other projects and future things that he will do, so check out those links, and we'll also put those in the description below. So thank you very much, Brian. So this is actually a very huge honor for us to have you in the podcast, and thank you for all the pieces of wisdom that you've shared in this conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to our 34 patrons. This episode is super powered by AskLex PH Academy, our official e-learning partner, the certifications on Lean Six Sigma, project management, data science, and many more. Juan CFO, CFO services, bookkeeping and tax and payroll processing for startups and small businesses. Divico Technologies, IT solutions specializing in software development, blockchain smart contracts, digital wallets, decentralized applications, and cybersecurity. Voila, the next evolution of digital trust, privacy-focused, seamless digital experience for sharing identity information across Web2 and Web3 ecosystems. Buzz, Web3 microblogging app promoting freedom of speech and content ownership. Benjoy's Food Products, the home of premium bacon ends, Tapa, and Tocino. And Space Cebu, the biggest branch in the Philippines, global co-working space, meeting rooms, and private offices for startups, digital nomads, and freelancers. Looking for buy and sell online with Sigurado Sellers. NutriCoach, the all-in-one productivity tool for dietitians and nutritionists. And Spotify Team, podcast launch, production, editing, and management company, helping to increase podcasters' efficiency. This episode is powered by Contact, affordable RFID business cards. Uplift Codecamp, SiriusMD, Board Prep, Pareto Consulting, Zales, and Pocketworks. Please support the podcast through the links in the description.